Revenge of the Trump. He's back, and this time it's personal. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us every week on this podcast, as well as on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed. Colonel Vindman and his twin brother fired and escorted from White House premises as an act of political revenge for his impeachment testimony. Gordon D. Sutherland, the ambassador of the European Union, also dismissed. What do you make of it, Ed?
Well, I think this is good fodder for Democratic ads on television, radio, and the like. And by the way, let me come out forbidden right now. This is my portion of the ad. Look, when a democracy is afraid of the truth, it can't last. The Washington Post headline, their motto is, democracy dies in darkness. Mm. The Trump administration is becoming more and more dark, and hopefully people will resurrect the light, and the Trump administration has to go now, not just Mr. Trump.
Susan Collins, last week, you said you were surprised that she didn't vote with Mitt Romney on the abuse of power allegations. Her reasoning was basically Trump has learned his lesson and would now improve and be better behaved. I think we can fairly put that one to rest this week.
maybe we can put Susan Collins to rest. I think the move that she took and the subsequent actions are so much cannon fodder in Maine against Susan Collins. Now, Susan Collins has one thing going for her. There's several candidates running against her. There's one that is right on her heels, but about two of them would defeat her. So, and the other good thing about that is when those people go out, they'll be going out for the presidential and the Senate person. The Senate is the most important thing in this election because if Bernie became president and the Senate remained Republican, what could he do? If the Senate is won and Trump becomes president, unless he overthrows the entire democracy and the Democrats have the lower house, he's got to make some big concessions. I don't even know if he could last four more years.
Mm. William Barr and him going to bat for Trump. The Roger Stone case this week is a perfect example. The Department of Justice, there was initially the recommendation of 7 to 9 years in the Roger Stone case. He's found guilty, sentenced to 7 to 9 years. Now, it seems William Barr, after Donald Trump has sort of come in and say, well, no, we can't do that. 7 years is too long. William Barr has stepped in to ease back on that recommendation, leading to the fourth prosecutor in the Stone case to not only resign from the case, but resign from the Department of Justice. What do you make of these ones, Ed?
Well, let's start with the last thing, these resignations. They're not just humdrum workabees in the background. These are top-notch prosecutors. And they only get there by spending years and years learning the ropes and dealing with these courts and these judges. So that is an enormous blow to justice. Let's start with that. The second thing here is the judge still has the decision. Now, this is probably going to make this judge think in two ways. One, I have to do what I think is best, but all of a sudden I have to have a reason for it. The other is she doesn't want to be excoriated by the Trump. So I suspect she was never thinking about 7 to 10 years. She's probably thinking about 2 or 3, and I would say it's going to come out at maybe 2 and some other time. Trump can knock some of that down with clemency, and it's over. But Roger Stone is over, too.
I mean, where do we go from here, though, with the Department of Justice becoming another tool of the presidency?
Well, this reminds me of something that was happening in a country in the middle of Europe in the 1920s.
It has some familiar rings, yeah.
Very familiar. The Reichstag, the Justice Department, and so on. I was reading a book called The Metropolis that shows how people were torn between what was just and fair and what was necessary. Now, we don't have people starving to death in the United States. They were in Germany, but we have the same mentalities going on. So Mr. Barr has lowered the bar, but he's done what everyone else does in this orbit. It's as though the sun has come so close to the Republicans, it's burning them. The other thing is, if we look at the long-term demographics, this is really a rearguard action by the Republicans. Just think, if he wins another term and the Democrats keep winning, the next Democrat might be in forever if Trump will give up the office.
The Trump budget coming out this week, we can talk about the cuts, we can talk about increases, but firstly, just how much should we care given this budget's got a snowball's chance in hell of getting through in its current form?
Well, that's true. But Trump will use this politically. He'll say, I'm strengthening defense as we need it, and everybody knows we need it, the coronavirus. He'll use all this in his favor. Poor people, unfortunately, don't vote. And Trump sees them as an easy target. For the Democrats, though, this means they have to put on one heck of a show to get past all this. We'll see how this works out, but I think we're going to see the demos using this. The essential thing the demos have to do is show they're for the working black person. Black people are big voters in urban areas. The surrounding suburbs are mostly white, and they're more and more progressive. If the blacks don't turn out, and the progressives do, Trump wins. But if the progressives and the blacks turn out, so the blacks will turn out over the welfare cuts. The progressives will turn out over the Medicare cuts. Those two are the things people are concerned about. No one's concerned about the economy at this time. A bad job is a job right now. People see what's going on around the world. So just keeping any job, thank God, Mr. Trump. But if you're a farmer, damn you, because my business is really gone to heck in a handbasket. And giving me dole money, either in Australia or in America, is not the way the farmer wants to go. So the Democrats can win with somebody in the middle. And we'll talk about that in the next few minutes.
Yeah, we will indeed. Just before I get onto that, though, because obviously we're talking about the cuts. I mean, there's been a lot of cuts to some of these fallback programs for poorer Americans. As you say, the poorer Americans, maybe they're just left out because they're not going to vote in these kinds of situations. There's cuts to food stamps. There's cuts to a whole bunch of fallback programs. A little bit of money for the wall. Nothing bad signing about that. Nothing surprising. But in terms of a rather large increase for NASA for a proposed travel to Mars, and now the Pentagon requesting some $15 billion from their fiscal budget for the Space Force, the newly minted sixth branch of the American military, is Trump trying to make his mark in the final frontier? He's got to have something that he can point to and say, this was my legacy. Is he making his legacy in space?
You made the point that he wants to do something with the military. The military has actually rejected a lot of new armament because the armament has to be moved to the place where the battle's going to be. The new battles are cyber battles and they're air battles. Putting boots on the ground is no longer the future. So the Pentagon can't give him a budget to increase that. As a matter of fact, the biggest cost of the military is not while the people are in the military, but when they get out. The Veterans Administration, I think, is the third largest administration in the United States. My brother just had a back operation. He's a vet. Huge back operation. He was a vet 25, 30 years ago, but he keeps his veterans program going by having enough years in and the like. So vets who get out continue to get benefits. Those benefits are heavy. So what do? Tanks, spacecraft, and so forth are not getting benefits. Spacecraft gobble up a lot of the budget. I'm not entirely against it. I don't like the Space Force idea, but I'm not entirely against spending more money in space because that's the next frontier for everything. And I think that's the point he's going to make. The Russians are now not all ahead of us, but in terms of providing long, deep spacecraft that can return to Earth, the Russians are ahead of the United States. So the combination of the new Space Force and what the private sector is doing in this area will make a big difference. So the Space Force is here to stay.
Still looking domestically, and this week the FBI has elevated the threat of racially motivated extremist violence. Now, this is looking towards the likes of neo-Nazis and white nationalists. They've elevated that to the national threat priority on the same level of the likes of ISIS and terroristic events. What do you make of this?
It sounds like the FBI has been the FBI. And the return of the FBI to its old status, because it had not been for the FBI, racial discrimination would still be going on in America, and segregation. The FBI had been very good at ferreting out these kinds of people. And this is one area where Trump did not make this policy, but you'll be sure that Mr. Barr and Mr. Trump will be trying to weigh into it because these are his followers.
And now looking international, the coronavirus, unfortunately, still making a lot of headlines this week. It's really obviously hurting the Chinese. The death toll has now risen to over 1,100. What kind of roll-on effects are we seeing?
Well, clearly we're seeing all over the world Chinese not being able to travel anywhere outside of China. Internally in China, and just this week, because of the long New Year's holiday, people are beginning to come back to work. But a lot of firms are still shuttered, and they will be shuttered because their markets are overseas and people just don't want their products. Let me give you one example that hurts Australia, the cochlear ear. They've canceled operations for putting that ear into people in China. But this will spread simply because devices like that that are developed in Australia are sold around the world, but they're manufactured in China. A lot of our medical technology is manufactured in China. If you're going to put that, I just had eye surgery yesterday, as you know. if you were telling me that my eye surgery was coming from China, I would postpone it. So this goes deep into everybody's economy. It has some advantages for the United States because United States, although they shelved a lot of manufacturing in some areas, in specialized areas like this, they can turn it on. So this is good for the American economy in certain ways, bad for the world economy in every way.
Mm. And just while we're talking internationally, there was some news out this week, White House inside sources, as they do, saying Donald Trump has kind of given up, put North Korea on the back burner. There will be no more North Korean talks with Kim Jong-un in the foreseeable future until the 2020 election is solved. That's because there's really no win-win situation if he does have any of these talks, I suppose. But what do you make of this one, given it was one of the major political achievements for Trump in the foreign policy area?
Why do you think we had an Israel treaty, Israel-Palestine treaty? Because he could do that. He can't do that with North Korea and make such an announcement. He doesn't have a partner on the other side. The Israel treaty goes nowhere. But he now has an international thing he can talk about, and the other one won't be talked about. For Trump, the best news with North Korea is no news. But the North Koreans are not going to stand still. Now that they've heard that, you can be sure more testing will go on, and the Japanese will be very rattled.
Looking back in sort of the lead up to 2020 and some of the politics that's being spoken about there, we saw the Iowa results trickling through after that big disaster for Democrats last week. New Hampshire results now coming through. What do you make of the latest?
Well, interestingly, Buttigieg and Sanders tied in terms of the number of delegates they come out of New Hampshire with. Now, Sanders had a few more votes, so he's declaring victory. That's a weak declaration. If a guy from the middle of the country who was a mayor of a small town ties you, that's weak. The winner of this was Klobuchar. Hmm. She came in third. That means she's surefire vice president. And no matter who wins the presidency, he's going to be some old guy, and she can be the first female to run for president. I think if a Democrat wins, it'll be for one term. Bernie can't stay more than one term. And if Joe gets up, Biden gets up, he's only there for one term. Klobuchar is the winner. Klobuchar cannot win a national election. But she's from the most important state in this election, Wisconsin. And Wisconsin and Michigan usually go in tandem. If Wisconsin and Michigan are won by Klobuchar in her presence, it looks like Pennsylvania is already pushing very hard toward Democratic. That only leaves Florida in play. The rest of the states, California is going to vote for whatever Democratic, etc. So what we have to look at here is not the national vote, but the state vote. And only three states have to come out for Trump, and the last ones that were won by the Democrats, and the Democrats win. That's the new ballgame. Now, who can win for the Democrats? I hate to say it, but the former mayor of New York. Bloomberg, for two big reasons. Now, there are other big Tuesdays coming up. There are other events where he will be on the ballot. He will have more money going into those states. He already has an international profile. He has the capacity to run a grassroots campaign as well as an air campaign. That is not as strong as it could be, but he can inherit, as people drop out, he can inherit those ground troops. So as Warren's ground troops leave, he can buy them. He can buy the ground troops from Biden. He can buy those ground troops across the country. I'm sure the Obama ground troops are still around and available. He can buy those troops. I hate to see the election being bought, but the way the Democrats have rigged it, a ticket where they can spend as much money as they need to spend with Klobuchar on it, it kind of doesn't matter who's ahead of it, unless the person's a socialist. And then the black vote will not come out.
Look, just I think that is a final point, an excellent point to leave on our final point, which is James Carville. If we're talking strategy this week, the longtime Democratic strategist, he's a very famous face when it comes to some of these races. One of the quotes that he put out this week, "We have one moral imperative, and that is to beat Donald Trump." That seems to be the one and only goal for a lot of these Democrats, whether we are talking they're a socialist like Bernie Sanders, whether they're a big spender like Michael Bloomberg, a come from behind like Buttigieg. This is the one imperative that is behind that. What do you make of that, of the race so far in terms of that as a goal?
Well, let's use the term race again here. The race that counts is black. Black voters in the cities in all these states can make the difference, combined with the urban vote. Black voters, to date, have not been interested in socialism. The way out of the ghetto is not more welfare for the black voter. Okay? Something on the bottom, you know, to hold you up, but nothing to support you for the rest of your life. So I don't think Bernie, both in terms of age and the way he presents himself, is appealing to the black voter. But Joe Biden is an old beer drinking buddy. He's been in the black communities for a long time. Black people respect him. They like him. And the fact that his son did something, I say, hey, I can let that one go. The Democrats have to have either Bloomberg with money or Biden with credibility to win this thing. I'm hoping they get one or the other. I'm not a Bloomberg fan. I know both these people personally. I know Bloomberg best because I lived in New York. And I was one of the first people to interview him on the radio. helped his campaign get going. So I actually know him very well. And personally, I think he would be, he has Trump's strength and sense what he brings to the table. He's a no-nonsense business person, but he has a heart of gold. When he was working in New York, I went to visit him in the mayor's office. And so I said, well, where's the mayor's office? They said, that cubicle over there. He was sitting among the other people in the cubicle. And then we had to go out. And I was waiting for the car. He says, what are you waiting for? We jumped on the subway. That's the kind of person he is. That's the kind of person Joe Biden is. That's the kind of person that wins an election.
Ed and I will be back next week to talk the latest in the presidential race and everything else going on from sea to shining sea. Remember to subscribe, drop us a review wherever you find the podcast, and check us out on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed.